Leave it to fifth graders to tell it like it really is. I'm Jeff Horwich, and you're listening to The Loop from Minnesota Public Radio. And I dropped by a fifth grade classroom the other day to talk with the kids about crime. The Loop wanted to hear some new voices on the issue, given how crime has been in the news all summer, not least because of a deadly year in Minneapolis. I went to White Bear Lake, a suburban school, mostly middle class, not exactly crime-ridden. But the kids had some sobering things to say about the world around them and how we adults are getting along.
What kind of rules do you have for how people are supposed to treat other people?
You have to be nice and, like, you can't hit or be mean to anybody.
They have to treat others how they want to be treated, how we want to be treated.
You also want to be respectful.
Do you guys get the sense that adults, they do as good a job of following the rules of being nice to each other that as kids do?
Nope.
That's what you hear on the news.
Kids usually don't murder people.
It's always on TV, like robbery or killing.
In the real world, there's all these people shooting people, killing people, kidnapping people, so.
Whenever I'm watching the news with my parents and I see a kid stolen, I just get nervous if that guy's not coming for another kid and it's going to be me or something. So I just get freaked out.
Adults get in fights. And some adults can, like, get, like, really mad and stuff and, like, throw stuff at your truck and stuff.
When does it change? When you turn?
Probably when you go through puberty.
You just become a different person if it gets harder to play by the rules?
Yes.
Teenagers sometimes, like, they can hurt people.
Yeah. Their different voice gets really low and it's so scary.
Now, those kids may be right that without puberty we'd all live in a much more crime-free world. And one can certainly point fingers at the media for stoking extra fear in us and our children. But crime is a fact of life. And when we gathered some of The Loop's community of listeners a few weeks ago to help design this show, it was amazing how many had stories to tell about encounters with crime and their attempts to avoid it.
I thought, well, I need to make my bike as much a disincentive to steal as humanly possible. So what I did was I bought a little girl's bike, purple, just glitter. Whoever took it, it's going to have to live the rest of their life thinking, I stole a six-year-old girl's bike.
My girlfriend lived at 28th and 10th. We were actually on a first-name basis with the drug dealers. When we finally decided she needed to sell her house, I went out and asked them if they could move for a couple hours because people were coming to see the house. You know, and, you know, he said, you know, man, why are you getting in my face? What's the deal? I said, all right, fine. I'm going to have to call 911. Girlfriend comes out. She says, I'm already on the phone with them. She says, yes, I'm watching drug deals go on. Hold on a second. Sir, how tall do you think you are? You know, just flat out asked him.
When we were moving to Minnesota from Texas, our U-Haul was broken into. They didn't steal anything. We didn't really have anything of value. We'd sold everything. We'd both just graduated from college. We were broke. They took these boxes of photographs that had, you know, all my friends, all my high school pictures, all my baby pictures, you know. I think the thing that was most heartbreaking was my teddy bear. It was this one-eyed thing with the stuffing coming out. And I'm thinking, what do they want with that? But it was like my entire life before that moment was erased, and all I had was the future. It felt like being completely untethered.
The violation wasn't as much about the property. The violation was the ability of somebody to encroach on my world and my space, that little segment of privacy we're supposed to have allotted to us. That's far more important than any of the property, although I still miss my camera.
Those are your voices, listeners who choose to get involved with our show. And we'll be hearing later from those in our live audience here in the UBS Forum at Minnesota Public Radio. Tonight we'll explore crime through a prism of perspectives, from those who are struck by it, to those who commit it, to those whose lives are changed just by having it nearby. Along the way, we'll have doses of rap, humor, and music, and we're calling it Crime Hits Home. Sam Keenan is leading our house band for tonight. On the radio, on the web, or in the studio, we're glad to have you with us. And welcome to The Loop. Our theme tonight is When Crime Hits Home. And nothing is more direct, more personal, and more violating than when you're facing a mugger or a thief. What do you do? There are only two basic reactions. You can surrender and cooperate, or you can fight back. And we have a story now about two friends, Brian Miller and Django Amerson. They were mugged together this summer outside Brian's apartment building in the Frogtown neighborhood of St. Paul. It was a Friday night, a little past midnight, and they were pulling into the parking lot of the building. I'll let them tell the story from here. We'll start with what happened to Brian.
We drive past these two guys, and I totally ignored them. Django apparently didn't. And we backed into a parking spot, and we both got out, and we were talking over the roof of the car, and then the next thing I knew, there was a gun in my back, and this guy was like, I'm going to shoot you, put your, you know, give me everything you got, and got really scared and afraid I was going to die and only had $15 in my wallet, and so I gave him the wallet and really, really hoped that they went away.
I did not see the wallet change hands. I didn't see the gun at that point. They were kids. They were very young, and I just thought it seemed positive.
What could they have possibly been doing with me that was positive?
Asking you for directions or...
Friendly scuffle for directions.
I walked up and I just said, what's going on? What's going on here? What's happening? And then I saw the gun, and it rattled when the guy shook it. I don't know how else to describe it, because immediately... The first thing that went through my mind was, this is very clearly not a real gun.
We reacted to the situation in very different ways.
Yeah.
I was pretty much emptying my bowels into my pants in fear and dread. And then this guy walks around the car and is like, hey, what do you guys got there?
I asked the guy with the gun, I said, what's going on? And he said, yeah, you give me all your expletive. And I said, hold on. That's not a real gun. You know that, and I know that. And he's like, what? You don't think this is real? And I said, no, I know it's not real. And so I said, if it's a real gun, and we were right up by the entrance to the building. So in effect, there's a wooden wall right next to us where the mugging took place. And I said, if it's a real gun, go ahead and shoot a hole right there, and I'll give you the money that's in my wallet.
You have to say, while you were saying this, you were like stepping up to the guy. I mean, it wasn't like you guys were having like a civilized discourse. It's like you were bumping chests, and the one guy was like, I'm going to f-ing kill you. And the other guy was like, do it, shoot it.
They kind of started leaving, getting nervous and creeping away. And what happened was, as a literal parting shot, he literally punched me with the gun. He threw the gun up to my head and pulled the trigger at the same instant that it both slammed into my skull, and he pulled the trigger. It was just like a sound, and my head just got rocked to the side.
It looked like they just punched you and you fell over to me.
I just was like, whoa, and totally disoriented for a good 5 seconds. And Brian was like, are you okay? And he didn't, and I was like, man, I got shot in the head. You know, in my mind, I'm going, man, and I'm alive. This is crazy. I must be bleeding or something.
My perspective was that two guys with a real gun that could have killed us had mercy upon us and just punched you in the head and ran away.
It was probably a double effect of the impact of a gun, like being pistol whipped, and the brand of the gun, which I think was Daisy, which is an air-powered pellet gun, the CO2 cartridge, which luckily, I guess, you know, very luckily, it didn't have a pellet. But I was totally up for chasing those guys down just on foot, then decided against it and kind of just slumped down in the parking lot and waited for the cops to come. In retrospect, I feel a person ought to operate off of a list of priorities. And I mean, what is a wallet compared to, even if it's a pellet gun, I mean, it could have been loaded. Who knows? I mean, I'm touching the side of my face right now, and I mean, there's skin that I want there. What if you put it up to my eyeball socket and pull the trigger? That would kill you. Yes, a pellet gun can kill you if it goes into your eye, because it'll go straight through your eye into your brain, and you will die.
We're fundamentally different people in some ways in this situation. I've thought a lot about whether or not I would like kick someone in the balls if they did this again, or like try to do something like that, but I don't know. I think I'd be too afraid that they'd shoot me.
I'm more scared now than what, as it happened, for sure. I wonder if deep down I'm some sort of weird macho person. I'm trying to figure that out right now, assess it. I don't know where it came from and why. You know, so as I look back on it, I go, oh, man, I really screwed up. I mean, that's dumb. It's just dumb. And my neck is still very, very sore, possibly avoided by just forking over the wallet.
Our thanks to Brian Miller and Django Amerson. Producer Curtis Gilbert brought us that story. Given how many stories we hear about white crime victims, it might surprise you to learn the most frequent victims of violent crime in the U.S. are young, male, and black. These demographics also describe those who are most often arrested for crime in this country. These uncomfortable facts come head-to-head in the neighborhoods of North Minneapolis. This year, the North Side has been in the news. Murders and robberies are up more than 50% over last year. We wanted a new take on the voices from North Minneapolis. Shakademic is a local hip-hop artist and filmmaker who grew up in North Minneapolis. We sent him out with a recorder to capture the voices of young men there. And we asked Shaq to combine these voices with his own in a new combination of rap and reporting. Shaq, thanks for being here.
Hey, Jeff. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. Tell me what you wanted to convey here. What's the story you wanted to tell?
What I want to do here for everybody is to put out a message. Instead of making everything a negative, make it a positive. So what I've done out on the streets of Minneapolis was talk to people that are actually living in all of the violence. They're the ones that want to make a change. You know what I'm saying? So these are people, and I'm from North Minneapolis, so I had to step up and I had to take this opportunity.
Well, please welcome Chris Johnson, a.k.a. Shakademic, and Voices from the North Side.
Yeah.
As far as the news, becomes like a TV show. They're not lying about stuff, but it gets irritating when you skip out on the good things that's going on in the community to capture the bad thing that's going on in the community. It got so bad that I see news vans just posted around the neighborhoods waiting for something.
I'm from the hood, yeah, I live for the good. I play my part to keep it cool in my neck of the woods. Let's get it understood, from crackheads to bust downs, drug deals, tell little homies riding with us now. Got beef with a brother, you wanna bust? Wow, wow, that really showed you tough now. It's no bro, we killing our own streets while you fulfill your own life by taking a heartbeat.
You know, you kinda get a little bit nervous, but it's to the point sometimes where you hear gunshots, you don't duck anymore. It's normal to see a couple kids in a park jumping a guy and beating him down. And then you got a chance to ask yourself, are you a part of it? Can you do something to stop it? Do you wanna stop it? Do you wanna stay here and look at it? Or do you wanna run away? I feel that it's home. In any home, you got trials and tribulations, you know? Make sure that you are being a good influence.
All the boys is locked up, playing with the toys. Our people that we destroy when they say gon' stop. And all the girls is knocked up, youngin' ain't ready. Situation's getting heavy, can we get to the top? Think about not happy beef who you see in the streets. And everybody and their mama got something to eat. Brushing your teeth in the morning, feeling everything's fine. I left my busted bubbles and my troubles behind. I'm thinking that the ride was just a waste of my time. Can't make it, but you can go ahead and get on the grind. I spend it one more time for it to stay in your mind. Can we put a change to this game and get rid of the crime?
You know, Minneapolis is at the top of the murder rate. And honestly, I don't think we can change it because people are too stuck in their ways, you know? And there's a lot of cats out here that's stuck like that. They love the hood life. They love how fast the money comes. Now, you getting a couple $1,000s a day, you know, you don't want to go from that to make $8 an hour.
I remember when we were shoulders, it was all about fun. Playing tag with the super soakers, dry it out in the sun. If you wanted to make some money, we gon' rake us a yard. Ain't hard, but nowadays we try to take us a car. It'll be getting heated if ever someone took something up off. So know why you doing bogus, you're reaching it just because. Or leave it the way it was. Is you strong enough to quit it and say that it's see us done? A better life has begun for mothers, fathers, daughters, and sons. Talking about everyone. Change the system back to the way that it's never been. I'm sick of being shown out this fantasy and pretend. Let's put this game into an end and do some good for each other. Stop fighting with one another. Quit slapping up all our sisters. Quit hitting on all our brothers. Maybe someday in time we find a moment of truth. Everything that we do, man, it's all for the youth. It's all for the youth. You know all we do. Time to keep it real. Open your eyes. Want to be blind no more.
And you can't just leave the hood though, because the hood ain't never gonna change. If you just leave it, you just gonna be leaving behind your trash, which is just gonna build up. What you gotta do is change it. You gotta change what you leaving behind. Because if you leaving the hood, you leaving your kids behind, you leaving your cousins behind.
All the boys is locked up, playing with them toys. Our people that we destroy when they say gon' stop. And all the girls is locked up, young and ain't ready. Situation's getting heavy, can we get to the top? All the boys is locked up, playing with them toys. Our people that we destroy
when they say gon' stop.
And all the girls is locked up, young and ain't ready. Situation's getting heavy, can we get to the top? Come on. Yeah, break it down, uh-huh. Well, let's get along. When this shit gon' stop? Yeah. When this shit gon' stop, y'all? Break it down. Can we get to the top?
Yeah.
When this shit gon' stop? Nah, we need to get along. We need to break it down. Come on, can we get to the top?
You know what I'm saying? They throwing us in jail for stupid stuff. That ain't nothing to be proud of to me, is that you spent 10 years in prison. That should be one of the skeletons in your closet. We should be able to talk about, hey, don't you, how your business go today? How much money you make? You know what I'm saying? They help each other. Oh, you ain't make no money today? Oh, you know what? You my neighbor, though. I got it for you. But it ain't like that. You don't even trust your own neighbor.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Shrek Ademic, and we are some of the voices of North Minneapolis.
It's messed up, man. We losing a lot more soldiers out here than we is in Iraq, man. You know what I'm saying? I feel like we need some change.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. I love you, man. I love you.
That's Chris Shack Ademic Johnson. You're listening to The Loop from Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Jeff Horwich. Now, when you pick up the phone to report a crime, or maybe when you're right in the middle of one, the first person you encounter might be Caroline Bureau. 911 dispatchers experience a world of crime through their headsets and computer screens, and they encounter us in our darkest moments. It's a perspective you don't hear much, but Caroline hopes to change that with a new book, Answering 911, Life in the Hot Seat. She has dispatched for Ramsey County and is taking the night off from her current spot in White Bear Lake. Caroline, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, you certainly hear about muggings and thefts from those who call, but you also have a window into crimes that are, for the most part, kind of community secrets, like drug abuse and child neglect, particularly domestic violence. And I thought maybe we'd start with a reading from your book that deals with that last one.
When I've got two people who want to kill each other on the line, I try to get the more aggressive one on the phone with me. That way, he or she can direct all complaints, claims of wrongdoing, cursing and screaming, at the complaints department, me. And if the aggressor is focused on me, he or she is no longer stabbing the other party in the eye, throwing a lamp across the room, or whatever else was going on before I got involved. Sometimes this backfires, and I get both parties on two different extensions yelling at me about their sex lives, their overdue mortgage, his gambling problem, her cheating, and anything else they want to share. And in this age of cordless phones, sometimes my callers are able to multitask, screaming at me on the phone while trying to kill each other. I'm waiting for the day when someone puts me on speakerphone so as to keep both hands free to strangle a spouse.
So from your vantage point, listening to 911 calls, taking 911 calls, how much domestic crime is there in our community?
Well, I can just say a lot, and that it seems like it's a large percentage of the calls that we take, as opposed to stranger violence or people on the street attacking other people. Maybe we don't hear about it as much because it happens so frequently. It does seem to be the prevalent kind of violent call that we get.
What is it like for you to experience, really, I mean, to kind of feel how many bad things go on in your town?
It's something where I have to remind myself frequently that most of the world isn't like this.
Do you ever just want to sort of say into your phone to the world, you know, people get, you know, get a grip, start behaving yourselves?
Yes, absolutely.
Get it together?
Yes, but I don't, for the most part. It's not not in the first couple minutes of a crisis do you go, okay, let it go. Shape up. Stop drinking.
Do you think people get fixated on small crimes? Because what's happening to you at that moment, it must seem, I would think if someone's calling, like the most important thing in the world.
Yeah, they do get fixated on the small crimes, although the longer I'm there, the more I understand that. Although it's routine to me, it's not to my caller. And if I can offer at least a, gosh, I'm really sorry about that, you know, sometimes that's what people need to hear.
So you started working not too long ago in the town where you grew up, in White Bear Lake. What would you say has really surprised you about your community? What have you learned since taking that seat?
I would say the one thing that surprised me the most is the amount of drug use, and particularly meth use, in my area. I went to high school in White Bear and didn't know many people who did hard drugs. The meth use has surprised me a lot, and the amount of kids that it's affected.
And you have an experience yourself, I suppose, as a former crack addict, reformed now, of course.
Yeah.
And you write about that in the book, I should say, so it's no big secret. We're outing you here tonight.
Thank you. Thanks. It's good to have that out.
What does that experience leave you with in your current job? What does it teach you?
I have a certain amount of compassion. I also have a pretty good meter for when someone's lying to me. If someone repeats something to me two or three times, I generally know it's a lie.
So if we're going to call 911 in White Bear Lake and we're planning on lying, just remember, keep it brief. I might get away with it. Caroline Bureau is the author of Answering 911, Life in the Hot Seat. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You know, we set out to do this show about crime, but of course, the media covers crime all the time. As they say, if it bleeds, it leads. So we see tonight as a challenge to handle the issue from a new perspective. Different, say, from what our television news brethren might do. For example, at a typical station like KRYM.
Live from our KRYM Action 7 News Team newsroom, it's KRYM Action 7 News at 7 with KRYM Action 7 News at 7 News Team Action Anchor Tim Tollefson. KRYM Action 7 News. All crime, all the time.
Good evening, Twin Cities. It's a beautiful night in our crime-infested town. I'm Tim Tollefson, and now to tonight's top story. We go live to St. Paul, where a string of public assaults has residents asking, who is this guy chasing me? KRYM Action 7 reporter Jake Jasperson is live with a KRYM exclusive. Jake, fill us in.
Thank you, Tim. As you can see, the streets are almost empty, except for the Type A's leaving work late, looking straight ahead as they head home. It's pretty normal, except for the latest in this string of assaults, which you'll see as I step aside, is unfolding directly behind me. The victim appears to be a woman, middle-aged, a little heavy on the makeup. The perpetrator, a very large and mean-looking man. Tim?
That's amazing. But Jake, where are the police?
That's an excellent question, Tim. Where are the police? Someone should really call them. Now, I wonder if we might move in a bit. Tony, bring the camera around this way. Excuse me, ma'am. I wonder if you could tell us what you think of the growing crime problem in this neighborhood.
Are you crazy? Don't just stand there. He's trying to take my prize. Call the police. Help me.
Gripping words tonight, Tim, from someone at the epicenter of the current crime wave.
And, Jake, I wonder if we might get a word with the man administering this meeting.
Actually, he seems quite busy, Tim, and angry, in fact. We'll have an update at 11, Tim.
All right. Be safe, Jake. You're watching KRYM Action 7 News, all crime, all the time. We'll return with more disturbing perspectives on your community after this.
Tonight on Minneapolis Alley Patrol. I'm Minneapolis Alley Officer Grabowski. We're just out checking the alleys for any kind of suspicious behavior. Excuse me, sir. What are you doing in this alley?
Well, how you doing there? I'm just taking out the garbage.
All right. Let's see your alley license and registration.
I don't have any alley license or...
Okay, scumbag, if that's how it's going to be, we'll just take you downtown. Minneapolis Alley Patrol is filmed on location in the alleys of Minneapolis. Watch it tonight at 9.
You're watching KRYM Action 7 News, all crime, all the time. We go next to downtown Minneapolis, where businesses have been blasting opera music in hopes of deterring crime. Janet Babcock is downtown with the latest. Janet, how has the opera experiment been working?
It worked quite well for a while, Tim. After a few days of Pavarotti and Puccini, the streets were notably more peaceful. As word spread, however, there was a slight uptick in crime here as criminals who actually enjoy opera converged on this area from other parts of the city.
And I understand some businesses have been trying variations on a theme, so
yes,
to speak.
Yes, Tim. As you can see, I am now walking down toward the Target Center, where in an effort to disperse vagrants, you can hear they are piping in the American Idol audition straight onto the street.
Baby girl, listen to me now. This is time to let me...
Time will tell, Tim, if this technique makes people less or more prone to violent activity.
Thank you, Janet. Now for our weekly segment, KRYM Action 7 News in Depth. I'm joined by Dr. Nathaniel Johnson, a professor of anthropology and criminology at the University of Minnesota. Dr. Johnson, based upon your research, what are the deep-seated causes of crime in this community?
I'm very glad you asked, Tim, and it's a highly complex issue. There are factors of economic opportunity, longstanding historical inequities between different communities of Americans, pressure from immigration, and the strain upon our educational system.
Yep.
And if we really want to understand crime, we have
Sorry, Doctor. That's all the time we've got for this edition of KRYM Action 7 News at 7 in depth. Thank you for joining us.
I really think...
we get it. Very, very complicated. Thanks again. Tina Takanudo is standing by with a look at what's coming up on KRYM Action 7 News at 11. Tina.
Thank you, Tim. A band of armed thugs plans to pillage a specific Twin Cities neighborhood tonight, and police are powerless to stop them. Is it your neighborhood? We've got the answer for you, coming up at 11. Tim?
Thank you, Tina. Really news you can use. Alley Patrol is coming up next, followed by a new episode of Cops... Invergrove Heights. For all the KRYM Action 7 News at 7 News team, I'm Tim Tollefson. Thanks to our actors, Rich Kronfeld, Andrea Eiten, Jackie Fuller, Jason Blumenthal, and David Jonas on sound effects. Tim Post was the guy behind Alley Patrol with a little help from Gary Osberg. You're listening to The Loop on Minnesota Public Radio. Now, we talked to some kids at the very top of the show, a suburban school, where they know about crime largely from the news. I also visited another school. The families in East St. Paul are a wide mix of incomes and backgrounds. Johnson Elementary is a beautifully remodeled old school with cheery hallways and new playgrounds. But the principal says there have been 4 gunshot incidents in recent weeks, including one at a home visible from the school's front door. The violence makes him worried about the very unchildlike thoughts and anxieties kids might bring to the classroom. We got a dozen 5th and 6th graders together there to talk about how crime hits home for them.
Once I was riding down the street on my bike, and I got bike jacked. I was driving down the street, and then these older kids saw me, and then I tried to ride away from them, but they were fast, and so they caught up with me and pushed me off my bike and got on it and rode away.
My two next-door neighbors are bad. On, like, a Saturday, there was a shooting, and some person got shot in the leg. And then, like, 2 weeks after that, somebody committed suicide.
What has it been like for you while all this has been going on?
It's weird because I'm not allowed to, like, stay up and go outside late at night. I'm not allowed to sell stuff around my neighborhood anymore. It's just really weird. 2 more sex offenders moved around here, so I'm not allowed to go outside like I used to be, like, to stay up and stuff, and I'm not allowed to go past 2 blocks away from my house without having to have somebody with me. It's just a scary feeling that anything can happen any minute, any time of the day.
Do you just feel like it's a little early for you to be having to think about that kind of stuff?
Well, no. Kids should be thinking about it now to make sure they're not in danger. Thinking about crime is good, but thinking about it too much will get you kind of stressed out and worried.
I think that kids should have, like, weapons for self-defense in case somebody tries to come up and beat them up or rape them.
I don't think children should have weapons because if you use the weapons, it'll just make you look as bad as the other person did.
I thought that if we would get rid of most of the weapons that these things wouldn't be happening. If people didn't have weapons, what would the world be like?
More of these things wouldn't be happening if we just had more cops, like if they built a station close enough and more of them. I see some cops riding around, but mostly it's only on busy streets. I've never seen one go down my street unless something has happened.
The rules that apply in school or for kids should apply for the adults, too. I think that they should keep their hands and their thoughts and their words to themselves so fights don't end up breaking out.
Is that the way God made us, like, to kill people, or is that just the devil's fault?
I don't have an answer for that. That's heavy stuff. Those are students from Johnson Elementary School in East St. Paul. This is The Loop from Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Jeff Horwich. You're listening to the first in a series of monthly broadcasts of the show, and you can learn lots more about us and help us create future shows by visiting our website at minnesotapublicradio.org. We're calling tonight's show Crime Hits Home, and we're turning our lens to get different perspectives on the impact of crime. And now we're going to flip that lens all the way around, about 180 degrees, and hear from a criminal. A murderer, in fact, serving a life sentence in Stillwater. David Doppler tries to come to grips with his crime and his life in prison by writing and performing poetry. And in this poem that we're going to hear, Dust's Dust, he looks from an inmate's perspective at how criminals are made, both by prison itself and by the stoicism of the world that they come from.
My pen is my Prozac, my notebook my shrink. And as I do my time behind enemy lines, I take a minute to tell it how I think. Feel, will, no pill to enhance my mind's erection or the direction of the blast that will last until our dust, dust turns to dust. Process, rocked up, chopped up, and inhaled through nasal passages, embedded in cranial ravages so that a futuristic nation will have a thought of my thoughts, sparking the flame that will ignite the fuel of the youth to do more than just maintain or dismantle brains. My blood stains will paint pictures that scholars will attempt to decipher, like decaying hieroglyphs that are unable to expose the truth. But in the streets, my code is on the wall. Murals and graffiti performed by young Picassos tell my story of good time, misfortune, downfall, and glory. Tory Spelling couldn't act in my drama. This is not a joke. I exhale gun smoke. My tongue is a 4-5 aim between your eyes when you'd rather hear lies. In my throat is a bomb that brings me back to the blast that will last until our dust, dust turns to dust. Converting my 4-5 to a vitamin rust that will nurture a population of youngsters to formulate their methods of communication into melodic pronunciation of what they feel is flagrant. Stagnant dreams are felonious schemes designed for the genocide of teens by any means. Detention centers, group homes, and prisons seems to be popular place to raise kids in. No kidding. Eyes wide shut, babies removed from gut and housed in concrete cribs. Punished for showing emotion, that's all they did. Foolhood left blind, unable to say what's on their mind, and you feel that they have it too good? My pen is my Prozac, my notebook my shrink. And as I do my time behind enemy lines, I take a minute to tell it how I think.
David Doppler, what put you in Stillwater State Prison?
I had got into an altercation with my brother's best friend one night. It was a lot of drugs and alcohol involved, and I was convicted of first-degree murder.
You shot him?
Yes.
In the poem, you suggest that people who are in jail are, I think the wording is, punished for showing emotion. What do you mean by that?
Well, at least my experience in interacting with a lot of people in here and understanding my own problems as a teenager was that it is kind of taboo to express yourself creatively. You aren't supposed to show emotion. Like, you're supposed to be this hardened person without expression. And I feel that when guys are in a situation that makes them emotional or brings them to a point where they don't feel that, well, I couldn't just sit here and cry about this, or I couldn't just sit here and write about this, or I couldn't exactly express to somebody I was sorry, they choose to express that emotion in a different way, which may be negative because they feel that's the only option that they have.
This may be simplifying it a bit, but are you saying that if some of these folks who are in prison had learned to write poetry before or perform music or find other ways of grappling with their emotions, they might not have acted out in a criminal way?
I can't say that people's lifestyles would have changed or anything like that, but a large part of people who commit crime, their reasons behind committing crime is they feel there's no hope. And if you had a way to interact with others in a way that you felt hopeful, if you felt that there was something out there for you, if you felt there was something better, then it is very, very possible they wouldn't have acted out in a criminal manner.
Now, you've heard the phrase criminal mind, I'm sure.
Right.
Do you think that is a specific thing, that there are those who have, say, a criminal mind and those who don't, or do we all to some extent?
say that everybody has the potential to be criminal-minded.
What does it take to push somebody from having that sort of germ, you know, the potential to be criminal-minded and act on that to actually doing so?
Education, understanding alternatives. Some people haven't seen it any other way. Some people know no other way to be successful or to live life.
60 seconds left on this call.
Well, in 60 seconds or less, what, David, would solve the crime problem if you had to point to one thing?
Different concept of education. In the home, in schools, in society, in every level of how a person would grow or understand life from a very young age. It needs to be something new.
David, we're going to get cut off in a moment here. Thank you very much.
And that's the way conversations often end when you're on a timed phone call from the Minnesota Correctional System. David Doppler is serving a life sentence but could be paroled in 2025. Our house band tonight is led by Sam Keenan, who lived until very recently in North Minneapolis. And I suppose it was a source of some musical inspiration. Sam, why don't you tell me a little bit about the song you're going to play?
This is a song, just a little ditty I wrote about my time over north and the mostly decent people who live there. And below that, maybe some sad people, and then criminals, and morally below that, musicians, you know, on every other block.
So we have Adrian Suarez on drums, Heath Hengem on bass, and Sam Keenan on guitar and vocals. Sam Keenan. Now, at this point, I want to bring the house lights up a little bit, take advantage of the audience we have here in the UBS Forum at Minnesota Public Radio to talk a bit about crime. I'm going to start off with this question of whether there's anything that a person can do to make themselves less likely to be a victim of crime. If you talk like a crazy person and wave your hands as you walk down the street, for example, is that going to make you less likely to be a victim of a mugging? Or does it just make you look like somebody who's wearing a Bluetooth headset with their cell phone? I don't know. Are there things that you do in your own life, being out in society? Yeah.
I recently had my car broken into, and they stole some of the CDs. So if you don't want to be robbed, only listen to jazz.
I'd say more people that dress up very nice, valuable clothing are more likely to get robbed than people walking around the streets with baggy clothes or shredded clothing, because that's the typical stereotype nowadays. You dress nice, you have nice things, and you have money.
One of the simplest things you can do, actually, to keep yourself from getting attacked, and this doesn't work all the time, but be nice to people. Or walk by people, say hello. Most criminals that are out there don't want to be noticed. If you've said hi to somebody on the street, they know that you recognize them. And more often than not, will move away from you or will not go after you simply because of the fact they do not want you to be able to identify them later on when you're talking to the police and be able to say, this is what they were wearing, this is what they look like, here's the identifying marks that they have. It also helps promote a good neighborly atmosphere in your community.
Is this your personal opinion? I mean, where did you come up with that? I say hello to people and they look at me like I'm nuts. Or I'm like trying to, women look at me like I'm trying to make a pass at them. Men look at me like I'm trying to make a pass at them.
But have you ever been robbed doing that?
No. Actually, about the expensive articles as well. Wasn't somebody recently killed here in town for an athletic shirt? So I think that alters the perspective.
His story about the person getting shot over an athletic jersey, that is a block and a half from my house. And it started hitting home when I drove to work the next morning, and there's a little memorial to the 15-year-old that got shot.
What was your perception of that area before? I mean, do you see that block, that spot on the sidewalk where it might have been as totally different than it was?
Yeah, because we've had a lot of crime about 6-8 blocks south of us. I kind of felt like there was an imaginary line that was north of Dowling that was keeping us safe. And it keeps creeping closer and closer and closer to the point where I know a lot of people around me are thinking, well, let's go farther away from the imaginary line that keeps moving. And it gets so you just want to avoid it. You want to leave. You don't want to be a part of the problem. You don't want to be a part of the solution. You just want to not be there as your crime prevention strategy.
I know that we have people in the audience who have experiences with crime, and I want to sort of turn the conversation in the direction of what it does to a person, how it changes you. You know, when you've been a victim even of either of a household crime or a personal crime like what we've just been talking about.
I can honestly say that because I have been a victim of crime, I think it scars you mentally and also emotionally. Something like that happens in your life, you don't forget about it. It's just something that's not going to go away, and for me, it never has. So,
can you share any general details about what it was that happened to
gang,
you?
Gang-related issues.
You look like a pretty young guy, yeah. Right? How old are you?
I'm almost 16.
Kind of thing I suppose you never want to deal with, but do you think when you're young, it will affect you differently than if you had been, say, 24, 30?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Because when you're little, you don't really understand things real clear. And when you're older, you kind of understand why things happen for a reason.
And so at the time for you, it was just senseless?
Yeah.
In a way. Mike, I don't know if you want to get in here. You've got a great story to tell. This is Michael Katch, whose story you may have heard already, but I'll ask him to maybe tell it again.
First off, I'm not a victim of crime. I'm a survivor of crime. I won't be a victim. I won't let them make me a victim of crime. I go back in the same neighborhoods where I was ravaged in the past. I'm not frightened to deal with the same people.
And Michael, the story that you have, you ran for legislature in a part of Minneapolis, North Minneapolis, and were jumped while you were out knocking on doors.
Knocking on doors.
Right? you didn't press any charges against these kids. You know who they are.
Actually, I don't know who they are.
Okay, but you didn't pursue it. Why not?
No, I can go into the whole Jesse Jackson prison industrial complex where we're putting too many people in jail. And jail seems to be the only option. We have to have other solutions other than jail. There has to be another solution besides what law enforcement is. Most of these young people aren't really frightened of going to jail. We have more people in prison in America than in China, and we're still not safe. The solution has to come from the community. Then there has to be some hope involved in the solution.
Michael, thank you for being here. And one more back in the corner. Thanks.
I'd say if you actually did a crime, they'd respect you more. Like, oh, they'd go in and, yeah, I did time. I killed somebody. You'd actually get a lot more street respect from that. Being part of gang-related crimes myself, I've seen a lot of that come by. I've seen it go through. I've seen one person get shot, and I've been robbed once, and it's not very fun.
Well, thanks, everybody, for joining us, everybody who added their comments. We're glad to have you here. I would invite all of you, whether you're listening at home or listening here in the UBS Forum, to continue this conversation along with us and with each other. You can find us at minnesotapublicradio.org, and you'll find Fans of the Loop listening and talking about the show as well on a website called gather.com, which, as far as we're concerned, is a great place to throw ideas around and help us shape some upcoming shows. The Loop continues in a moment. You're listening to The Loop from Minnesota Public Radio, and I'm Jeff Horwich. Even when you aren't the victim of a crime, it can hit you in the gut and make you wonder about the place you call home. That happened recently to Christina Schmidt, a colleague here at Minnesota Public Radio, when Minneapolis recorded its 41st murder of the year, about two blocks from her apartment. It was a drug deal gone bad, no innocent bystander shot down out of the blue here. And maybe that's why it was marked only by short, emotionless newspaper accounts. Christina says many in her neighborhood, the Whittier area of South Minneapolis, still don't know it happened. She took me to the spot exactly 1 month after the shooting, a corner where they couldn't help but notice.
This is the corner of 24th and Nicollet, and on this side of the street is the New York Pizza Place, which is really good pizza, and Hark's convenience store, and then across the street is the McDonald's. Somebody from St. Paul came over to get drugs, and things didn't work out for them, and they shot a person over here.
According to police, a 32-year-old drug dealer took a bullet in his back on this corner at about 2 a.m. Police are holding the prospective buyer as the main suspect. The guy told police he didn't know his gun was loaded. Christina thinks of her neighborhood block by block, safe and unsafe. And she always considered this corner just inside her safe zone, thanks mostly to Hark's Food Market, the local convenience store, and especially the family that runs it. Christina has only exchanged pleasantries with the family, but her sense is that they are tough and proud, a bulwark against the dangerous blocks beyond, even after the shooting that happened right here.
It still is the boundary. I just feel very strongly that wouldn't have happened when those guys were open. I wouldn't live in a neighborhood where I felt like I could get shot in the middle of the day.
Do you feel at all like you're looking for reasons to feel like it's still safe? Like, oh, you know, it was the middle of the night. Let's put aside the fact that there was a bad drug deal going down a block from my house.
You mean you think I'm delusional? Like, I'm in denial? It could be, but...
Well, you want to like the neighborhood, of course.
I like the neighborhood, but like I also said, though, I mean, I don't know how to explain it. I don't want to be robbed, but I like being a little more on my toes. I like the people that are comfortable with that.
The people living in this diverse neighborhood want to have faith in Whittier. But according to police reports for the precinct, it's been a bad year so far. Five homicides, the same as last year at this time, and way up from 2004 when there was just one. Rapes are up 15%, robberies up 9%, assaults up 25%. The police precinct includes a more upscale area to the west known as Uptown, but a fatal mugging in Uptown this summer cast doubt on the safe perception of that area. It also generated a flurry of media and city government attention, a fact that causes some resentment in Whittier, where the murder on this corner went unnoticed by comparison. Surely they noticed it, though, at Hark's, the corner store. I follow Christina into the crowded but immaculate aisles. Ian Attes is behind the register. His family has run this store for 30 years. I tell him what Christina told me, that she considers this store part of her safe zone. He is surprised.
Safe zone, we're trying to keep those people away as much as we can, but you know, they keep coming.
What are the problems that you've been having?
Drug dealers, hookers. The officers stop by here almost every couple hours just to check on us. Get rid of those people at least for half an hour, an hour. They leave and new people just shows up.
I asked Ian what he remembers about the shooting in August. He says he was actually up at the time in his apartment about a block away.
I heard a little this loud bang. Yeah, it was right here, right in front of the supermarket. It was a Mexican guy, Hispanic guy, selling drugs. And this guy, black guy from, I guess, St. Paul, buying from the Hispanic guy. And somehow the black guy thought probably he was going to get it. He was being ripped off, so he shot him.
Was that the first shooting you can remember that's sort of right in this area?
Well, there was a shooting in this store like a year ago.
In the store?
Yeah, over here. This got four high school kids standing over here. That was last summer, yeah. They step outside and they start shooting at a moving bus. Turns out to be they were shooting at a, you know, one person that was trying to get onto that bus.
This is why you guys are open.
In like 3 p.m.
So much for the daytime safe zone. I ask Ian if he thinks things will get better. And he brings up the condos being built down the street. Long term, he's hoping more homeowners will mean less crime, the same hope pinned on gentrifying condo developments all across the Twin Cities. But what matters to him right now is that the site of those condos used to be a gas station, one that attracted the neighborhood's uglier elements.
They tear it down just to build those condos, right? And now all the drug dealers, the hookers, you know, name it, walking this way. So I'm the one who's have to deal with those people because there's no other way, other place to for them to shop around.
You might think a logical response would be to call the cops or otherwise try to run the bad element out of the store, make them feel unwelcome. Ian says, not necessarily.
The more I know them, the less they cause troubles. Hey, how you doing? How's your day been? This and that. They just buy whatever they want to buy and leave.
So you figure if you can sort of establish a relationship, even with the drug dealers and hookers.
Sometimes it helps to be friends with the bad people, trust me, in this neighborhood, actually.
Christina and I walk away up the aisle.
You didn't know there was a shooting, like, literally right outside the front door of the store
like
last year?
Like a year ago? No, I did not know that. That makes me sad. Like, they shouldn't be messing with this place. I don't know. I just love it here.
That shooting was at 3 p.m. You still consider this safe corner?
Yeah.
She's not sure why her logic still holds. She likes the fact that the Attes family is watching over the corner, even if they can't always stop bad things from happening there. And she really wants to like this neighborhood, with its racial diversity, blue-collar feel, and ample bohemian crowd. At that moment, one of the neighborhood cops walks up the aisle. Officer Ku Vang won't talk about the shooting, but wants to be clear it doesn't reflect on the businesses here.
That's a separate incident that just happened to happen here, so...
Vang says the police work with local stores like Hark's and ask employees to stay vigilant, reporting any suspicious activity. For his part, Vang and his partner drive up and down the street, watching all the time for what he calls the petty stuff.
You know, people are walking here that has no business walking here late at night. That looks suspicious, you know. The prostitution, all that little stuff, you know, graffiti and stuff. All those things lead to other big things, you know.
It makes sense, but it's not clear it's working. There was a rather big thing that happened just about a month ago, and another shooting the year before that. Christina and I walk back outside.
Am I in denial, Jeff?
Maybe it's not so much being in denial as just crime is a way of life, and it's a sliding scale depending on where you live and
what your comfort zone is with it.
Yeah.
We walk up the block. A homeless man tells us he's been here for years and the neighborhood is going downhill. A young white man using a cane says he feels like a target every time he comes to visit his girlfriend here. A young black man says the crime bothers him, too, but he doesn't want to work with the police, who he says harass him even though he doesn't deal drugs or even have a gun. None of them has heard about the murder that happened just yards away. Sadly, none of them is surprised, either.
The following is a paid commercial program and does not necessarily reflect the views of Minnesota Public Radio or, for that matter, Twin Cities Public Television, which are not related, even though many people think they are.
Hello, everybody. I'm inventor Jack Johansson with a limited-time offer for an amazing new product. With me is Becky Ripley. You may know her from her one-time appearance on General Hospital in 1993.
Hi!
Now people think, how many times have you looked around your home and neighborhood and thought,
ew, just look at all this disgusting caked-on crime!
Robbery, gangs, drug deals, bicycle thievery. Sometimes it feels like just one mess after another.
And I'm a busy woman. I don't have time for all that. But Jack, how many times have we heard it? There's just no easy way to wipe off years of built-up crime.
That's where you're wrong, Becky. And that's where new Crime Away comes in.
Easy fixes for crime? I just don't believe it.
Well, Becky, step over with me to this simulated scale model metropolitan area.
But just look at this crime, Jack. It's so rank and crusty. I hardly want to touch it.
That's the best part, Becky. Now you don't have to. Look down here on this street corner.
Uh-oh. Looks like a carjacking.
Right you are, Becky. Looks like a bad one, too. But just apply a few spritzes of crime away. Pshh.
Look at that! Now he's just asking for directions. Jack, what's this over here? Looks like a fast food holdup.
Sure does. But even armed robbery is no match for crime away.
Shh! I don't believe it. That gun turned into a 20% tip.
Why waste your time with complicated theories or expensive social welfare programs? Through secret patent-pending technology, one spray of crime away administers the perfect quick fix for any crime problem.
What about drug abuse?
Shh. Just Say No posters at every bus stop.
Prostitution?
Sting operations filmed for TV.
Domestic dispute?
The soothing sounds of Luther Vandross.
Shootings?
More cops.
Stabbings?
More cops.
Bank robbery?
More cops.
Youth gang activity?
More cops. And after-school hockey programs.
How about graffiti, Jack?
Little Club Soda, get that right out. When fighting crime is this easy, you can't afford not to call. Call in the next 30 minutes and we'll include at no extra charge a free sample of another amazing new product, Terror No More. Now available in both original Homeland and new travel-size bottles.
Order now and say goodbye to crime
with Crime Away. Order now by calling the number on your radio. Possible side effects may include 1984-like police state. Jackie Fuller and David Jonas joined me in that last sketch. We have a few special thank yous to get out of the way before we end for the evening, especially folks behind the scenes who've been invaluable to us tonight. Ambar Espinoza, Ilona Piotrowska, Curtis Gilbert, Andrew Haig, Melody Ng, Dan Olson, and Nikki Tundell. The band is Sam Keenan, Heath Henjum, and Adrian Suarez. Our engineers tonight, Kyle Weslow and Denny Hansen. Alan Freckman is our technical producer, Sandon Totten, our assistant producer, and Michael Scholar, our executive producer. Join us next month at around this same time for the next Loop, topic still to be determined. If you have some ideas for us, you can talk to us and other listeners through our homepage at minnesotapublicradio.org, where you can also sign up to be a part of our official Loop network. We want to keep on building all of our future shows with your feedback and collaboration. That's it for the Loop tonight. Crime hits home. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.